From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, religious and progressive groups call for a moral state budget in 2019. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts on the top political stories in New York for 2018 and what to expect in the coming 2019 session. And the Department of Environmental Conservation says the Hudson River cleanup isn't done yet. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Religious and progressive groups say they will press Governor Andrew Cuomo and the state legislature to adopt what they call a moral state budget in 2019. The groups brought their views to the Capitol just before the Christmas holiday. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The Reverend Peter Cook with the New York State Council of Churches says the new legislative session should focus on the higher goals of fighting poverty and racism, protecting the environment, and strengthening democracy. At a press conference outside the state Senate chambers, Cook also said the state's tax structure needs to become more equitable, and economic development programs should focus on the needs of the poorest citizens.
There is an unimaginable amount of wealth in our state, but at the same time, we have a tragic number of people who contribute a lot to our economy, but who are making meager wages and who can't meet their most basic needs. Many live in our cities, in our rural communities, in abject poverty.
The Council of Churches, along with other religious and union-based groups, say the state's income tax surcharge on millionaires should be expanded to include additional higher brackets for multimillionaires and billionaires. They'd also like to add more brackets to the real estate transfer tax, which is at 0.4% no matter what the property's value. And they would like the tax to apply to cash real estate transactions, not just to mortgages. Afterward, Cook explained that the groups are not just in favor of raising taxes. They'd also like to see property tax relief. He says lower-income people bear too much of the burden of New York's high property taxes.
What's happening in the state is that property taxes are subsidizing the tax cuts of people at the very top of the economic system, people who probably live in about three or four zip codes in the entire state. And these are taxes which really impact the smallest minority in our state and who were the overwhelming beneficiaries of the federal Tax Cut and Jobs Act.
Cuomo, when he announced his 2019 legislative priorities earlier this month, continued a more fiscally conservative approach that he stuck to in the past. Cuomo wants to keep a 2% per year cap on property taxes, but he says he does not want to expand taxes on the wealthy beyond extending the state's income tax surcharge on those making more than $1 million a year when it expires at the end of 2019. Cuomo has said repeatedly that he worries wealthy New Yorkers will leave the state if their taxes go up, especially now that the federal tax code changes make it harder to deduct state and local taxes over $10,000. But Cook says he doubts that many rich people would leave the state. He says even after the income tax surcharge was imposed on millionaires a few years ago, the number of those making over $1 million has grown in New York State.
People stay in New York because they can make a lot of money here in a way that they can't in other parts of the country.
Cook and the other groups say they are pleased, though, with some of the governor's plans for 2019, including cutting carbon emissions, expanding voter access, and stricter gun control laws, among other things. But they also want more money spent on providing health care to the uninsured and underinsured and to boost public education spending. And they say they are hopeful that a newly Democratic state Senate, along with a Democratic Assembly and governor, can be more receptive to their proposals. The Reverend Emily McNeil with the Labor Religion Coalition says the first indication of the newly Democratic state government's values will come when they craft the details of a state budget.
The first test of this new legislature will be whether they reject austerity and pass a budget for the many, or continue the inequality-increasing policies of the last decade. Our communities just can't afford to wait any longer.
The budget is due at the end of March. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, here we are at an end of another year as we head into 2019. Let's first look back at some of the top stories of the year and then go look forward. I'll start with the blue wave that hit New York.
Well, the blue wave hit New York and California and a lot of other places, and the House of Representatives is now in the hands of the Democrats, who are promising that they are going to be investigating the Trump administration, and that goes a long way. And David, then there is the fact that the blue wave has brought in the Democrats into the state legislature in a big way. They already had the assembly under Boss Hastie. And then the blue wave brought in the New York State Senate under Andrea Stewart Cousins. She looks like a lady of real integrity. She is making it clear that they will do their jobs. And one of the jobs of the state Senate is oversight. Now, the next thing that we're going to have to look at is the way in which Tom DiNapoli is treated. He is the comptroller of the state of New York. He had a pre-audit function. The state legislature, I have no idea why they did that. It just shows their utter fealty to the governor and the governor were for taking away his pre-audit function. We are pretty sure that had that not happened, he at least would have had an opportunity to look at the kind of things that were going on with the Buffalo Billions and with the other kinds of corruption that we know occurred in New York with Joe Prococo and some of his colleagues. This is something that should never have happened, and the state legislature ought to get off their knees and give DiNapoli back what he deserves, which is the power that the Constitution seems to invest in him as an independent controller.
So as we go forward into the new year, the governor has all the pieces in place to get perhaps what he wants. However, an article in the New York Times with Jesse McKinley and Vivian Wang, they look forward and show already that within days, questions about the governor's intentions for his plans have emerged, including when it comes to getting rid of outside income.
Well, outside income is a huge issue. As you know, the culture of corruption in Albany is just simply terrible. Part of it is what is illegal bribery. We've already talked about that. Then there's legal bribery. Hey, why does somebody go to a state legislator who is also a lawyer? Come on, you'd have to be nuts not to understand that what this is all about is I'm going to go to a lawyer who has extra power and people will bow their heads to him because he's a, or her, because they're state senators or because they're state assembly people. So that's why we absolutely need a ban on outside income. Now, who has done this? The House of Representatives in Washington has done it. If it's good enough for them, well, it's good enough for our state legislators. Well, they're fighting it like a bunch of banshees. They don't want it. Boss Hastie in the assembly is carrying the water for the other people in the assembly. Look, one and one is two. We know what this is all about. They want their outside income and they want their pay raise, and that's disgusting.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government, politics. I'm David Gustinum. A New York State task force recommended new maximum contaminant levels for chemicals found in drinking water. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard has reaction from a community dealing with pollution from the so-called emerging contaminants.
On Tuesday, the New York State Department of Health's Drinking Water Quality Council recommended new maximum contaminant levels, or MCLs, for chemicals currently unregulated by the federal government. Thresholds of 10 parts per trillion were set for PFOA and PFOS. The chemicals have polluted water supplies in communities like Hoosick Falls, Petersburg, and Newburgh. As part of a consent order with New York State, companies Saint-Gobain and Honeywell have installed a permanent filtration system on the village of Hoosick Falls water supply and hundreds of filtration systems on private wells in Hoosick Falls and the town of Hoosick. David Engel, environmental attorney with Nolan and Heller, who also represents the village of Hoosick Falls, does not believe the recommendation for new MCLs will impact testing or operating of filtration systems.
So all the sample results we get produce the results as against a detection limit that is somewhere around 1.6 parts per trillion. So if the samples come back and the values are higher than that, we know that's the result. And the filter system that is in place out in Hoosick Falls is designed and operates with the purpose of getting below detection limits.
Though, Engel says, the new thresholds do confirm the validity of residents' concerns about health. PFAS contamination has been linked to several health effects, including various forms of cancer. Engel declined to say if the new MCLs would affect ongoing negotiations between the village of Hoosick Falls and Saint-Gobain and Honeywell, but did say the actions by the Drinking Water Quality Council should make it abundantly clear that PFAS contamination is a serious public health problem.
And some of the efforts by the companies in the past to downplay or belittle the significance of these issues, are, I think, finally revealed as being, really without any kind of credibility at all. It's time, I think, for the companies to recognize just how serious this is.
Hoosick Falls Mayor Rob Allen, writing on Twitter, called the new MCLs a huge, huge step forward. However, he did express concern about comments from State Health Department Deputy Commissioner for the Office of Public Health, Brad Hutton, as the Drinking Water Quality Council was considering PFAS thresholds below 10 parts per trillion.
Certainly, there's always a desire to be as protective as possible of public health. But I think when you get down to a level of four, I think you are approaching what many would term to be background levels in the population.
Allen said there is no natural background for PFOA in nature. The companies at the center of the Hoosick Falls contamination issue are also weighing in. In a statement emailed to WAMC, Saint-Gobain spokeswoman Dina Silver-Pokadoff said of the new proposed MCLs for PFOA and PFOS, quote, "This does not change the company's ongoing commitment to work with local, state, and federal officials," end quote. Honeywell spokesman Victoria Ann Streetfeld said, quote, "Honeywell remains focused on conducting the environmental investigations and necessary remediation under the state's supervision and direction," end quote. Sean Mahar, a spokesman for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, said Superfund actions in Hoosick Falls will continue, as will testing to ensure that cleanup objectives are being met.
Now, I think Hoosick Falls was really one of the impetuses behind the governor forming the Drinking Water Quality Council and making sure that the state had the right authorities to address these emerging contaminants across the state and to make sure that other communities in the state weren't being put at risk by these contaminants in drinking water supplies.
Mahar said as the recommendations are forwarded to the Department of Health for a regulatory rulemaking process, DEC will remain on the scene to ensure Hoosick Falls is put back whole. State officials began testing private wells for PFAS contamination in early 2016. At the time, an EPA action level was set at 100 parts per trillion. Though the new recommendation is one-tenth of that number, New York State allowed Hoosick area residents with private wells to have a point-of-entry treatment system installed on their property regardless of testing results. Justin Deming, public health specialist with DOH, said in light of the new MCL recommendations, the actions taken would not change.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
The Hudson River cleanup isn't done yet. That's according to the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, which released a study showing General Electric's cleanup of PCB contamination in the Upper Hudson River is incomplete. It's the latest effort to convince the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to refrain from issuing GE a certificate of completion. GE disagrees. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo released the DEC study, indicating General Electric's PCB cleanup along a 40-mile stretch of the Upper Hudson River is not protective of public health and the environment. Outgoing DEC Commissioner Basil Sagos is urging EPA not to deem the project complete.
This job's not done, and there's more contamination than we all would have expected when we embarked upon this many years ago.
Sagos says it was important to release the data to the public and impress upon EPA that more cleanup is needed. Other stakeholders have recently said they believe EPA is on the brink of a decision. Sagos says DEC has been in heavy dialogue with EPA officials all year.
We've had some high-level conversations with our technical staff and legal staff, and as recently as early December, when we had a final sort of discussion about the data, and they indicated they were in their last stages, and I have no doubt they're angling towards making a decision in the next few weeks.
GE removed 2.65 million cubic yards of contaminated sediment through 2015. The EPA, in its second review of the cleanup of PCBs from the Upper Hudson, said that the $1.7 billion six-year cleanup of the Superfund site is working and will accomplish its long-term goal of protecting human health and the environment. An EPA spokeswoman says the agency has not yet made a decision regarding GE's request for certification of completion of the remedial action or the five-year review, and expects to finalize its decisions on these matters in early 2019. Mark Behan is GE's spokesman.
New York State knows full well that it agreed to and concurred in the standards that EPA set for this project. It embraced and endorsed the remedy. It was thoroughly supportive of the dredging project. It oversaw the dredging project with EPA, and it was instrumental in every single decision about the dredging project. And its own data, the state's own data, show that 99.8% of the sediment samples they took meet the criteria that EPA set. The state also knows that GE met or exceeded all of its obligations on the Hudson River.
DEC collected hundreds of sediment samples in the summer of 2017, confirming that elevated levels of PCBs remain in the surface sediment of the Hudson River. Sagos says DEC sampled nearly 1,700 locations, and its data showed that in many areas, the average PCB concentrations exceed the one part per million cleanup level typically used by DEC for sediment cleanup projects.
What we also have looked at is the fish concentrations, the PCB levels in fish concentrations. So we went out and conducted about 230 different fish samples and determined that the average fish PCB levels in fish in the Hudson River have effectively remained unchanged. So the same levels prior to cleanup, which to us shows that there are some lingering and very significant concerns in the river.
GE's Behan shines a different light on the state data, saying that nearly all of the sediment samples are below EPA's threshold for dredging.
In fact, what we know from the state's work and others is that PCB levels have dropped as much as 96% in the sediment in the Upper Hudson. PCB levels in water have dropped at every monitoring station along the Hudson. And PCBs in the larger fish that people eat have also declined very significantly. Dredging clearly is working, and the data demonstrate that.
The spokeswoman says EPA was expected to make a decision on the certification of completion in January 2018, but put the decision on hold to work through and understand sediment and fish data with DEC. She adds that the EPA decision will come after considering the results of what she describes as exhaustive consultation and collaboration with New York's DEC. Should the EPA issue a certificate of completion, Sagos says the state stands ready to take action.
If that means litigation, if it means taking a strong legal path to forcing the federal government into making the right decision, we're prepared to take that. But ultimately, we want science to be our guide here. We want science to convince the federal government to make the right determination. And if they do so, we'll be there right with them. If they're not, then we'll be in court.
DEC is also calling on EPA to direct GE to collect additional data to determine if another round of sediment remediation is needed.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. An upscale travel magazine has listed the Adirondack region as the top travel location for 2019. Those who promote the region are excited to see global recognition of the area, as we hear in this report from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
Travel and Leisure magazine has issued its top 50 places on the globe travelers should visit in 2019. Listed alphabetically, the Adirondacks are at the top, one of eight sites chosen in the United States. Lake Placid-based Regional Office of Sustainable Tourism President Jim McKenna says the publication has a readership of over 1 million upscale travelers and averages over 1 million monthly online views.
What's good about this is that it's not really seen as advertising. It's seen almost independent third-party credible review type of thing. So it plays a lot into really people's image of the area and their willingness to probably go to the next step and really look at it a little more thoroughly. So the fact that the word Adirondack worked for us by the alphabet in this particular list was an added bonus.
The short description of the Adirondack region features a photo of the renovated Hotel Saranac in Saranac Lake. Saranac Lake Area Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Patrick Murphy says the article helps lure a diversified tourism base to the region.
To be able to get a global publication such as Travel and Leisure to highlight us, it is going to help diversify those folks who are coming here, is going to be able to help sustain a tourism industry and bring folks in that may not usually have heard of us.
Tupper Lake Mayor Paul Maroon is thrilled that the magazine is recognizing the greater region and its amenities.
It is an upscale magazine. Most American Express cardholders will receive that. And I think what it's saying is that this place has been underutilized and under-advertised for many years. And when you talk about skiing, you talk about skating, you talk about boating, paddling, fishing, hunting, or just enjoying tranquility in the summer and winter, the Adirondacks have it all. I think it's great for the economics of not only the Tri-Lakes, but the North Country.
McKenna expects a longer follow-up article to appear in Travel and Leisure.
To be on that list and to really identify some real attributes of the area plays well. And then it's going to be followed up in their March edition with an additional 3 pages by the same people that were involved in compiling this list. So I think this will have some ongoing effect. We know from our travel research that people reading interviews by travel writers is a indicator that they're looking at the area and sometimes converts right into a direct sale.
The other U.S. sites on the Travel and Leisure list are the Florida Keys, the state of Georgia, the Grand Canyon, Hudson Yards in New York City, Houston, Puerto Rico, and Montecito, California. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1852 or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.